Thank you for joining us today on Battle for the Truth TV. This is Shahram Haidian. Folks, I'm a former Muslim, now a Christian pastor. I'm a patriot for America. I love this nation. I love our liberty. And this program, these programs are meant to be a voice of the resistance movement for liberty. It is time to defy the tyrants. It is time to put an end to the loss of our liberties and the coup that is happening in America. And we want to be a voice for all liberty-loving, freedom-loving patriots, conservatives, and Christians who are not going to sit by idly and allow our lives to be destroyed without a stance. So thank you for joining us. This is part six of a program that I've been doing titled Living Through a Coup, 1979 Iran, and the Lessons for American Patriots Today. Folks, you have to watch these programs. You have to share them. You have to be able to get the word out, because as I put these together, it is a look at history, my history of coming from Iran, my birth nation, but all the parallels to what is happening in America today and what the lessons are that must be learned for the patriots in America today. I've covered for you the betrayal of a leader by the military, like we saw with Trump. I've covered for you the infiltration of the universities by Marxists and leftists and communists in Iran, like has happened in America. I've covered for you the outward influence of into Iran by a deep state CIA under Jimmy Carter, a communist infiltration from the Soviet Union during and pre-1979 Iran. I've covered for you how I saw the loss of my freedoms. I covered for you how they force people to don a hijab, like they're forcing people to wear a mask today, all in the name of safety or social justice. And I've covered for you how when a coup happened, the purge was next. And in the last program, when I talked about all the military and high-ranking officials loyal to the Shah who did not leave like my dad did, who was a high-ranking military official, a lieutenant colonel who was responsible for being a liaison officer. He oversaw liaison operations between the Iranian Army and the United States Army in Vietnam and here in the United States. And he was one of the ones who saw the writing on the wall. He retired early, but many of his friends didn't. And some of those friends got executed by Khomeini and the Revolutionary Guard, the secret police that were set up after the coup was completed. Today on the program, I want to talk about an event that happened that changed history, modern history, an event that happened that really impacted U.S. policy, and that was the taking of the hostages and the United States Embassy. If you're old enough, you'll remember this event that happened in 1979. This is now going into the summer of 1979. The revolution happened in February. The coup, I should say, happened in February. But the revolution was really consolidated by May, when the Khomeini regime summarily executed over 120 high-ranking civilian and military officials, including the long-standing prime minister of Iran. These secret tribunals, they had kicked out of the country all the media that so they couldn't report on what was going on. Well, today in America, we don't have to kick out the media. The media are complicit in the coup. The media are part of the coup. They're part of the treason against our nation. And so on November 4th, this was a tumultuous summer. And interestingly enough, we had fled Iran to the States, but my mom, who was a school teacher, had about 9 or 10 months left to get her retirement for being a teacher, to get her 25 years of teaching for retirement so she can leave it to her relatives in Iran, the money, the retirement money. Because the American dollar, the Iranian dollar after the revolution totally collapsed. Sounds familiar to what could happen today. In Iran in 1979, there was the rial or the toman, and the toman was about 1 to 7, meaning every 7 toman was worth $1. It was a good currency. It was a stable currency under the Shah of Iran. Iran was prosperous because of its oil industry. The modernization of Iran was unbelievable. It was the most prosperous nation in the Middle East at the time. And when Khomeini came in and brought these quote-unquote social justice reforms, the rial or the toman began to tank. And very early, within 1 to 2 years, it went from 1 to 7 to 1 to 240. It went into the 200s, meaning that the Iranian rial or toman lost all value for any ability to invest in foreign entities or foreign businesses or people who were traveling overseas back to the West. It lost all value. And many Iranians lost much of their wealth and much of their assets because of the absolute decimation of the Iranian currency. This was the disillusionment that many woke up to in Iran. Many young people, as I mentioned on the program last week, like my cousin who was a fool, who was a useful idiot, using the historic communist term, who ended up becoming himself blacklisted and had to flee Iran for his life when, after 6 months of supporting the coup and the revolution, became an outlaw to the revolution and had to flee. This is what we're facing in America today. So by November, my mom had gone back to Iran to finish her time. I don't know why my parents made this terrible decision to send her back, but they did. And right in the middle of her going back to Iran in the summer of 1979, when I was left alone with my dad in Atlanta, Georgia, my mom went back, and it was only supposed to be 9 months. 9 months. Can you imagine as a 9 to 10 year old now, almost 10 year old, 9 and a half year old, and you're not going to see your mom for 9 months? That was bad enough. But during this time, the hostage crisis occurred. And because of the hostage crisis, ultimately, long story short, my mom could not come back into the U.S. because once the embassy was taken by, at first, Iranian students and those who were loyal to Khomeini, they were outraged that Iran, that the United States would not send the Shah back, as if they had control over the Shah. They were outraged because they wanted the Shah to be extradited back to Iran. And they stormed the U.S. Embassy. At least that was the tagline. I tend to think that there was a communist ploy here to take the embassy because of the fact that Carter, who had thought that he was going to usher in some form of communist utopia, who ultimately believed in socialism and Marxism because he supported Cuba and Castro in Cuba. Isn't it amazing how Jimmy Carter's legacy has been that he seems to support all the dictators around the world, like Hugo Chavez, like Ahmadinejad, the former president of Iran, and, you know, now with Ayatollah Khomeini, not Khomeini, the current supreme leader of Iran. So the embassy was taken. Well, during this time, when my mom was in Iran, she finished her 9 months, was going to come back, and guess what? She was notified when she came back to Europe and went to the embassy to stamp her visa, because we were here on a visa. We were not permanent residents yet. She was notified that her visa has been revoked and she could not enter the United States. And so she was stuck in Europe for another year and a half. Another year and a half. She was stuck in Europe. She couldn't go back to Iran because it wasn't safe, and she couldn't come to the U.S. And finally, my dad and I had to immigrate to Canada and live there for 3 months and get residency until my mom could come to Canada. And I saw my mom in Ottawa, Canada, for the first time in 2.5 years. I ended up going 2.5 years without seeing my mom. Can you imagine? It was a travel ban, by the way, put on by Jimmy Carter, a travel ban that nobody talks about. Yet the first thing that Biden did when he took office was revoke Trump's travel ban against terrorists and terrorist nations like Iran. And Biden comes in and undoes it. Well, nobody talks about Carter's indefinite travel ban that was not done away with until Ronald Reagan took office. So the embassy storming happens. And every day they take, now initially it was more than 52. They take 52 of the hostages. It was more than that. But Khomeini ends up trying to placate, and he releases the women, and he releases the minorities, and he says, we're going to release them because they are also oppressed of America. But they kept some of the Marines and the embassy staff. And for the next 444 days, they would parade these people before the media at times. At many times, they would go dark, and we didn't know what happened to the hostages. As a young boy living in Iran, in America, I was subject to stereotyping and being ridiculed because I was Iranian. And people were very cruel because they were blaming all Iranians for the activities of this Islamic regime, this red-green access, as you see on your screen here. Yet I had nothing to do with this because we fled Iran for freedom. But this was unfortunately the messaging that was going on, and it was very difficult being in the South here back then. I didn't blame them for the anger, though. I understood the anger because if somebody had taken my people hostage, I would have been upset too. And so 444 days, and they would have these protesters like you see on the screen outside the embassy saying that they want the Shah sent back to Iran. They want him extradited. They want to put a trial on for the Shah, that it is Carter's fault. Now remember, Carter and this deep state CIA supported this overthrow. They betrayed the Shah, and now they were reaping what they had sown. They were reaping their terrible decisions. They would have these press conferences where people would come and try to figure out, you know, are the hostages okay? If you listen to the testimony of the hostages, there were times where they would be taken out into the courtyard, into the back of the embassy or the area they were being held, and they were being told they were being put in front of a firing squad. And they would hear clicking and the racking of the rifles and click, but no bullets. They were subjected to this psychological tormenting multiple times by their captors. And so for 444 days, these 52 hostages were kept in Iran, around the world. It got the attention. In America, it got the attention. This was headline news. This is ultimately what brought down the Carter administration. And of course, the failed attempt by Carter in 1980 to be able to, remember, he's now in the middle of a presidential election, 1980, against Ronald Reagan. And Reagan is just hammering him on the weakness because Carter was a pacifist. And Reagan is hammering him on the weakness with his appeasement of Khomeini, his appeasement. You see, folks, the left always wants to appease, but there's no appeasing evil. You have to stand in strength against evil. And so the appeasement continued. And finally, Carter decides to send a rescue operation, a middle of the night rescue operation, and which ends up disastrous because the helicopter crashes in the middle of the desert and 8 servicemen are killed trying to rescue the hostages. And it's all on world news. And the Iranians, of course, mock Carter and America for being so weak. They were routinely mocking Carter and the United States for being weak, which is exactly what's going to happen now. That's why you're already seeing suicide bombings in Iraq again. Yet you haven't heard from ISIS, right? Have you heard from ISIS recently under Trump? He decimated ISIS. He liberated most of Iraq. You didn't hear about suicide bombings. There were no suicide bombings. But now, all of a sudden, that Biden's in, it's starting again, folks. And there's going to be clamoring for wars again. We're trying to bring our troops home. They're going to send them back again. Because the neocons in both parties want war, war, war. War is good for the pocketbook, right, of the deep state. So in 1980, when my mom was still in Europe and I didn't see my mom for 2.5 years, as I mentioned, the embarrassment, there was a public figure in the United States who was very outspoken. I believe this was a galvanizing moment for his future. A young political, I'm sorry, not political, but businessman 34 years old, October 6, 1980. He was interviewed by the press and he was asked his opinion. Now remember, this is right before the elections. This is right before the presidential election of 1980. It began between Jimmy Carter, who was seeking a second term, and Ronald Reagan. The cowboy, right? The cowboy. And this figure, businessman, is asked about the embarrassment of the hostages and how America was being ridiculed day in and day out, embarrassed by the world, just like our election in this 2020, the embarrassment of the world. The most powerful country in the world cannot have a free election. So he said, quote, "The Iranian situation is a case in point. That they hold our hostages is just absolutely and totally ridiculous. That this country sits back and allows a country such as Iran to hold our hostages, to my way of thinking, is a horror. And I don't think they do it with other countries. I honestly don't think they do it with other countries." Do you have a guess of who this political or this businessman was? Who this public figure was? He was not a politician. Yes, you guessed it. This was indeed Donald Trump. And according to historians Brenda Sims and Charlie Latterman, as cited by Brookings, they believe this was Trump's first known comments on any U.S. foreign policy. This is his foray into the political arena, into talking about how America should act in its foreign policy. And I believe this was a galvanizing moment for Trump, one that I will cover in future shows when we talk about how Trump decided to take out Qasem Soleimani, the head of the Quds Force, in January of 2020. I believe it was a galvanizing moment because he wasn't going to be Jimmy Carter. He wasn't going to be a pacifist like Obama. He wasn't going to be a warmonger like the Bushes. He was going to bring our people home. He was going to put America first, just like the Shah of Iran wanted to put Persians first, restore the Persian identity of Iran. And so, fast forward now, January 4th, 2020, a day after the U.S. drone strike that killed Qasem Soleimani. This is what Trump tweeted. "Listen to the influence that the hostage crisis had on Donald J. Trump." He said, "Today we targeted 52 Iranian sites, representing the 52 American hostages taken by Iran many years ago, some at a very high level and important to Iran and the Iranian culture, and those targets and Iran itself will be hit very fast and very hard. The USA wants no more threats." Donald J. Trump, January 4, 2020. Folks, the hostage crisis in Iran galvanized Donald J. Trump. He said, "We're never going to be embarrassed like that again." Yet, we've been embarrassed. Trump wasn't able to stop the coup. Trump wasn't able to stop the deep state. Trump wasn't able to purge the military of the black hats. He did some good things, but ultimately he wasn't able to do what was needed. And we're going to pay the price for that. Now, can there be a movement? I hope so. Can there be a MAGA movement that can rise up again? I hope so. I pray so. But understand where we are. But understand the hostage crisis had a profound effect on Donald J. Trump. And something interesting also happened, because you see, when you stand up against these tyrants and when you stand up against these globalists and this red-green axis, when you stand up against those who want to kill and destroy and cause mayhem with strength, because Ronald Reagan had been saying all along throughout the campaign that if he was president, he would have, paraphrasing, dealt with Iran and he would have bombed the living daylights out of them. You see, Iran feared the cowboy, not the pacifist Jimmy Carter. They feared the strength, the cowboy. And so when they saw that Reagan was elected as president in November of 1980, they began secret negotiations with the United States for the release of the hostages. They wanted to save themselves from being bombed because they believed Ronald Reagan. Just like ISIS and Iran and North Korea believed Donald Trump. They believed that he would do what he said he was going to do. Just like when he said he was going to move the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. And no other president had the guts to do it, but he did. They believed him. China. He stood up to China. He stood up to North Korea. He stood up to Iran. And all those things are going to be undone by this illegitimate administration called Biden-Harris, the deep state, the puppets of China. So Ronald Reagan comes in. And on January 20th, 1980, I kid you not, literally the same day as the inauguration of Ronald Reagan, the Iranians release all 52 hostages after 444 days. The hostages are set free as literally Reagan is being sworn in and given the authority to call up a military strike against Iran. They didn't want a military strike against them, but they didn't fear Jimmy Carter. They feared Ronald Reagan. Just like our enemies didn't fear or feared Donald Trump. That's why they had to take him out. The deep state, the globalists, they had to take him out. They create a virus that ends up upending the world and America, destroys our election integrity. They can cheat left and right, and they're able to get rid of him. You think that the world, you think Iran is going to fear Biden? You think North Korea, who's already posturing now, again, they're already planning on starting up their missile tests. You think they're going to fear Biden or Harris, these puppets? You think Russia, Putin is going to fear? No, China controls Biden. Russia now controls Biden. They control the United States military. Why would they need to invade if they control? And so Iran now has become the Islamic Republic of Iran, a threat, existential threat, the government, not the people, the government. And so Iran has become the new powerhouse in the Middle East and Saudi Arabia. Why do you think the Saudis came to the table to talk about negotiations? Why do you think Qatar and Bahrain and United Arab Emirates came and signed a deal with Israel, restoring diplomatic relationship under this Abraham Accord? Well, part of the reason is because they're losing, the Arab Muslims are losing their power base because the Sunni power base is shifting to Turkey. They control the Sunni powerhouses. They control the Muslim Brotherhood. And the Shia power base is Iran. And all of these people are ultimately under the control of the globalists. Now, you know, who will win out in the end? That's up to be decided. Because both of them are anti-God, anti-nationalist, anti-Christian, anti-family. But, you know, I don't know who's going to win out in the end. But we know one thing, it is ushering in an antichrist system, a beast system. And it's ushering in a World War III. And it's going to be cyber, but it's also going to be, actual battle troops. And then, of course, we had Obama excusing and opening the assets and unfreezing $150 billion for the Iranian regime. Then he gave them another $1.7 billion, $1.3 in one plane load and $400 million in another plane load. $1.7 billion, the number one state sponsor of terrorists around the world, citing and supporting Hezbollah, their proxy, supporting Islamic, Palestinians in Gaza. Al-Qaeda now, you're going to see in my subsequent broadcast that Al-Qaeda has now found a new home in Tehran. Al-Qaeda is going to set up its base of operations out of Iran. And so we sold out. And of course, Biden has already said that he's going to re-enter the Iranian nuclear deal again. And he's already appointing people to cabinet that were part of the negotiations for the disastrous Iranian nuclear deal. And so Iran is going to be nuclearized. They're going to get a nuclear weapon. This is going to happen because we have weak leadership and corrupt leadership. And they're setting up. They have continued, but they're going to continue now to expedite and expand their nuclear capabilities. No matter what the neocons tell you, no matter what the posturing is, they're going to allow Iran to get armed. One way or another, Iran's going to get nukes, whether from North Korea or China or Russia. They're going to get nukes. And this is dangerous for the entire world. And this is the mullahs. This is now the transition went from Khomeini, who died. By the way, interesting that they thought Khomeini was the Messiah. He died in 1989. Oops, I guess they were wrong. Now, since 1989, the guy in the center of your screen is Ayatollah Khomeini, and he's now the supreme leader. And this is the symbol of Iran today. Does this look like Iran pre-1979? No, you have a bunch of promoting jihadists that they want to make babies into martyrs, wearing the flag of the green of the Islamic movement, the keffiyeh of Hamas and the Palestinians, burning American flags, mourning the death of Qasem Soleimani. And yet, women are treated the worst in Iran than many other places around the world. They have to sit in the back of the bus. Girls and boys have their own classrooms, folks. Racism and segregation is alive and well in Iran today, folks. And this is how they view. Now, here's the thing, though. There is an uprising in Iran. There is, again, a movement called the Green Party, where they want freedom in Iran. Courageous women coming to the streets like this image, taking off their hijabs, pushing back. Now, every time this happens, they get decimated, they get attacked, they get arrested in prison. They get arrested and thrown in prison, but they're going to continue. There have been massive movements in the last couple of years to overthrow. And all they want is support from the West. And all they're going to get is Biden and Harris. This is not looking good, folks. But there's a massive movement in Iran. It's the fastest growing church in the world. There's a revival happening in Iran. They have the fastest growing church, Christian church movement in the world, mostly led by these women, because many of their men have been either imprisoned or killed. And there's a docu-movie called Sheep Among Wolves that talks about all this and how more Iranians have come to faith in Jesus Christ in the last 20 years than in the 1,300 years before Islam swept through the Persian Empire. So in America, we saw a coup. In Iran, we saw a coup. Now, the question is, will our coup in America succeed for those coup conspirators, or will we as patriots push back and defeat this red and green axis that you see on the screen? The communists, the globalists, the Marxists, the Islamic coalition joining with their social justice warriors and their useful religious idiots. Can we destroy this? That's why Brandon House put together the docu-movie Sabotage that I have a couple of some clips in there as well. Folks, you got to get these docu-movies to understand 6 hours how America is being sabotaged from within. Thank you for joining us here on Battle for Truth TV. Join us on our website at tilproject.com. Please subscribe to our text alert, 94,000. Text Truth and Love to 94,000, 94,000. Sign up for our app, sign up for our newsletter, and please support the ministry, tilproject.com/donate, or go to our donate page and support this work so we can continue to wake up the patriot movement and continue to fight for liberty. We will not be silent. We will not stop, and we will stand. God bless you guys.